At the City Club of Chicago, a discussion today on City of Chicago finances. Are we on the brink? Moderated by Lawrence Massal and featuring John Cass, Naomi Richman, and Fran Spielman.
Thank you so much, Jay. It's a privilege to be here. I am Lawrence Massal. I'm the president of the Civic Federation, which is a nonpartisan government research organization founded just about 120 years ago. The Civic Federation founders were some of the legendary Chicagoans that brought the World's Fair here in 1893. But before I get further, I think it'd be appropriate to bring up the rest of our panelists. If you want to come join up on the stage, John Cass, Naomi Richardson, and Fran Spielman. You can either go that way or this way. So as these are very exciting times for those of us that watch government finances. In just 10 days, the nation will turn its attention away from the two conventions, and everyone, the whole world, will be watching as the Chicago 2016 Olympics begin in Rio. People at every level in this city and around the world will be trying to figure out how the Chicago River never looked prettier than what they have in Rio. The air quality there makes what we see outside something to miss. But this, I'll leave it to the panel, and that'll be one of the things that we'll talk about, is what impact, if any, because we benefit tremendously from this panel, and certainly our two reporters covered the Olympic and the Olympic bid and its potential impact on finances. For those of you who aren't getting the newspaper at home, the Illinois General Assembly adjourned on June 30th and without a comprehensive budget. Instead of a budget, they did something called a stopgap measure, which cannot be considered a budget because it's neither balanced nor comprehensive. Approximately $38 billion is now on target to be incurred by the state in a pretty much unmanaged fashion. This is going to put additional pressure on our local governments, our universities, our social service organizations, and on any group that relies on the state for financing. This General Assembly did allow a budget for preschool, elementary, and secondary education, a full year of funding for our schools, which is really the only area for which we have a full year of funding. This will allow the Chicago Public Schools and the schools around the state of Illinois to open on time. And that's not insignificant, but it's very difficult to see what will build the pressure after November for the stopgap measure to be replaced with an actual budget compromise that actually stabilizes the state. Chicago Public Schools are going to receive approximately $568 million more this year than they did last year. They're going to receive $103 million in additional state general state aid. They're going to get $213 million, but it's a state of Illinois promise. It's a $213 million promise to fund the normal cost of the pensions if the General Assembly and the governor agree on pension reform. And since neither has told us exactly what that is, it's a $215 million hope or promise. In addition, the General Assembly authorized a $250 million property tax increase for the Chicago Public Schools pensions. So that is a gift that we'll keep giving for the taxpayers of the city of Chicago. But even with those extraordinary actions, the Chicago Public Schools, which is, and we'll have Naomi go through a little bit of the background on the credit ratings of the Chicago and the Chicago Public Schools, but even with those actions by the General Assembly, that $568 million, hopefully, the Chicago Public Schools still face a $300 million shortfall for the coming fiscal year. The city of Chicago, it's less clear what the General Assembly gave them or what their impact is going to be. To fund the higher education appropriations this year, last year you'll recall it was almost April before the higher education institutions, the universities, community colleges received funding from the state. This year, in order to make room for that, the General Assembly and the governor agreed to take about $100 million out of the personal property replacement tax. That is allocation of money that historically went to local governments. So it's likely that the city of Chicago and other local governments will receive less money this year than they did last year. However, the city of Chicago is going to get a new form of tax increment financing as a gift from the General Assembly. That is going to be transit TIFs, or transit tax increment financing. That was passed in the waning moments of the session. We're still looking forward to getting more details on how it will actually work, but it's basically a TIF that will allow the city of Chicago, according to the advocates for it, to provide increased create a district around our major public transit institutions. And I should point out, it's not just for the city of Chicago. Transit districts around the state will have this new TIF. But the rhetoric is a lot more focused than the actual bill when you take a look at it and trying to understand how we're going to hold the Chicago public schools harmless and still capture enough money for the federal match that the city is proposing will be used to extend the red line farther south. So I think you could sum it up by saying that the Illinois General Assembly did everything it could to avoid any of the tough decisions that it needed to make. It was very creative. I think the only thing left is really a 1-800 number the General Assembly could adopt to allow us to sell our used cars in order to fund the pensions. But seriously, the state is in horrible financial shape. It's having a tremendously negative impact on the city of Chicago and Chicago public schools. This panel is going to help us answer the question, are we on the brink, or where is the city of Chicago going? I think in introducing our panelists, and what our plan is to allow each of the panelists to give their own 5 or 6 minute response to the question, is the city of Chicago, or are Chicago public schools and the city's finances on the brink, and what do they see going forward? And I think we'll go in honor of, we have an out-of-town guest, an expert from out-of-town who can straighten us out on what's really going on in Chicago. Naomi Richman is the managing director of the Public Finance Group at Moody's and the co-manager of the local government ratings. She's been at Moody's for over 25 years. She has an extensive background, having served in the city of New York, in the New York City Department of Finance, and she has worked with many local governments around the country. She's a member of Moody's Public Sector Credit Committee, which approves the methodologies and policies that set the global public sector ratings. So she has a hand and has a vote in how we rate, or how Moody's rates local governments in their financial status. She has a bachelor's degree from Bryn Mawr College. She refused to tell me anything interesting that happened to her while she was at Bryn Mawr, saying that she was not wanting to make headlines in that regard. She does have a master's degree in public policy from Harvard University and is well-regarded within the finance and professional field. So we'll start out with you, Naomi. So if you could give your overview on how Moody sees the city of Chicago, Chicago Public Schools, and our finances.
Thanks a lot, Lawrence. Thank you all for having me here today. Before I talk about Chicago, I just want to say a few things about Moody's. What is a Moody's rating? What does it mean? A rating conveys the likelihood that a borrower, like Chicago, will repay its debt in full and on time. A rating is not a comment on the intrinsic quality of a city as a place to live or do business. And it's also not a report card on the performance of elected officials. So although you may hear ratings referred to that way, it really is all about repayment of debt. Another important thing is that Moody's doesn't provide advice. We don't advise government officials on how they should run their cities. And we also don't advise investors on whether they should buy particular bonds. Instead, what we do is we give investors information, an opinion, which they can consider along with other sources of information in making their decisions. And the last thing I want to mention, which Lawrence sort of hit on in the introduction, is that Moody's is a global firm, and our public finance group is a nationwide group, so that when we rate Chicago or any other city, we're benchmarking against cities, states, other governments all across the country. So now I'll turn to Chicago, And I'm going to talk about the city's rating from two perspectives and kind of the two core questions that we get asked a lot. Number one, why is Chicago rated so low? And number two, why isn't it rated even lower? on that last one, it sort of paraphrases the title of this panel. Is Chicago on the brink of bankruptcy, the brink of default, which would imply a lower rating? I won't keep you in suspense. We think the answer to that is no, and I'll come back to that in a bit. But before I get to that, why is Chicago rated so low? And the answer is simple: debt and pensions. Chicago has the highest unfunded pensions, and by a lot, of virtually all 8,500 local governments that Moody's rates across the United States. And its debt is also high. And if you think about it, whether you're rating a country, a government, a corporation, you know, one of the key financial metrics you look at is how high is the debt compared to the ability to pay the debt. So just to cite one statistic, the sum of Chicago's debt and its pensions equate to over 9 times the city's operating revenue, and the average is 2.4 times. So Chicago is a lot higher. And what that high burden means is that over 35 cents of every dollar of Chicago's budget is going to service debt and pay pensions. And then what's worse is that the city is not making its full actuarial pension contribution. And if it were making it, over 50% of the budget would be going for debt and pensions. And as long as they're paying in less than the minimum, that number, that percent, is going to continue to grow, and you have a crowding out effect where more and more of the budget is going for these fixed costs and less is left for other important essential kinds of government services. Now, there's a lot more that goes into a rating than debt and pensions. We look at the economy and tax base. We look at annual operations and finances and reserves. We look at management and governance. But it's really the debt and pensions that set Chicago apart from other major cities. We have a negative outlook on the rating, which means at this point a downgrade is much more likely than an upgrade. But having said that, the one thing that would most likely get Chicago on a track of a moving up rating would be a reversal of the trajectory of the pension problem. So even with the large property tax that the city council voted on last year, the end result is that letting the problem get worse at a slower pace, as opposed to what we would really look for to start upgrading the rating would be that the problem is actually getting smaller. So it's the trajectory over time of where that pension liability is headed. And just to put the size of that problem in context, how much would it cost a year for Chicago to pay enough into the pension that it would get smaller the next year? And the answer is $1 billion. So if you think of the $544 million tax hike, you would need another two of those to reverse that trajectory. So now I'll turn to the opposite question. Is Chicago on the brink? Why isn't it rated even lower? And one way to look at that is through historical default probabilities, which are one way to kind of benchmark our ratings. At the very bottom of investment grade, so above where Chicago is, over a three-year period, you would expect less than 0.1% of bonds to default, so really a very, very tiny percent. And in the BA range, which is the first rung below investment grade, and that's where Chicago's rated, you're going to see we would expect between 1% and 5% to default. So even though that's still a pretty low number, it's a lot bigger than that teeny sliver. And then as you get to lower ratings, you know, those numbers go up and up until you get to 100% at the very bottom of the rating scale. So why isn't Chicago rated lower? Time is not about to run out for Chicago. The city clearly doesn't have forever, but there's still time, we think, to make policy changes to avoid a full-blown financial crisis. We recognize that the mayor and the city council inherited a problem that built up over a long period of time. They are showing a willingness to begin to address that problem. And those are positive signs, as opposed to a situation where elected officials would have their head in the sand and not even be doing anything. And then lastly, if you look at governments that have defaulted, like Detroit, like Puerto Rico, you'll see some real differences from Chicago, foremost the economy. So those were places where the economy was really under a lot of stress, losing population, shrinking, businesses leaving, and you don't see that here. And also their finances were in much worse shape, so they were really in an acute situation where they didn't have enough money to pay their bills as they were coming due. Another comparable is Atlantic City. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Atlantic City's finances, but you know, it was very heavily reliant on casino gambling. Over 70% of the property value was the casinos, about 12 of them. And when they started closing, property values plummeted, property taxes plummeted, and Atlantic City is on the brink. They haven't defaulted yet, but you know, they may well default before the year is out. So that's a contrast and one that I think is notable. So while Chicago's challenges are very real, very serious, and if the pension problem is never addressed, you could ultimately get to that brink. We're not there quite now.
Thank you, Naomi. Our next panelist will go to Fran Spielman. Fran, as all of us are aware, joined the Chicago Sun-Times many years ago after a successful career with WIND Radio, where she did a lot of sports reporting. She is a legend in Chicago in terms of her dedication and her pursuit of straightening out all the confusing messages that may come out of City Hall. She, I think, just two things that I wanted to point out to is she's been recognized by the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans with the Dante Award. And I think it sums up, and the Dante Award is aimed at recognizing someone who is no timid friend to truth. And I think that sums up Fran very nicely. She's had more City Hall scoops than Rainbow Cone. She is a dogged reporter on making sure that her readers know what's really going on in the city of Chicago. Fran Spielman.
If Mayor Daley had his way, we would be a bevy of construction activity getting ready to host the Olympics. I was a kid growing up. I not only wanted to go to the Olympics, I wanted to be in the Olympics. But I am glad that we did not win the Olympics. I kind of think of the Garth Brooks song, "Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers." Even though we'd have a lot of excitement and a lot of construction, we would have been left with billions in overruns, as every other city has when they hosted the Olympics. It wouldn't have been a Zika virus. It would have been a financial one. It might not have been apparent right away, but we're very lucky we didn't get the Olympics. And in fact, I remember asking at the time when Mayor Daley bought Michael Reese property, well, wait a minute, what happens if we can't unload this and we don't get the Olympics, if we're stuck with the property? And we were told, oh, no, don't worry. It's such valuable property. First of all, we're going to get the Olympics, and two, the property would easily be so attractive to developers. Where here we are, we're still paying off the debt. We'll probably end up paying tens of millions of dollars in interest if they can't unload it. So at least we didn't get the Olympics. But as Lawrence said, the schools are in a world of hurt. They got $600-some-odd million from the state, but $205 million of it is tied up in the contingent that we're going to get a state pension deal. Well, don't hold your breath on that one. It also assumes that the CTU will cut a deal that effectively has a 7% pay cut, that they'll phase out their pension pickup. And that's been elusive as well. We still don't know how they're going to fill their $300 million gap, even with all those contingencies. And, of course, the Board of Ed needs to raise property taxes by $250 million. The mayor had talked about $170. He quickly agreed to $250 as part of the deal that got as much as he did. It's a good thing that the mayor got the city council off the hook to approve the $250 million because they've already walked the plank for the $588 million for police and fire pensions and school construction. And as Moody said, that was a deal that had to involve an override of the governor's veto, and that's going to add to the long-term debt. So then, as far as the city goes, we have the municipal employees' pension fund. That's the largest of the four funds. The mayor has recently cut a deal to save the laborers' pension fund, and he's using all of a 56% telephone tax increase that was supposed to save two of the funds, and now he's using all of it just to save the laborers. The laborers have agreed to some higher contributions in exchange for retiring earlier, and there'll be a trade-off that they hope will pass legal muster. But again, there's no guarantee there that someone won't challenge that deal. Both the municipal and the laborers' deals have to be approved by the General Assembly. That hasn't happened yet. The mayor also needs to find a funding source for the municipal employees' pension fund when he cuts that deal. And so that's going to involve more taxes, and he's got to find those. So it looks like the property tax will not be used for that, but then he's got to find some other source. Will he use a utility tax hike? Will he raise the sales tax? Will he impose some kind of new stormwater stress tax on big box stores? What will he do to pay that huge several hundred million dollars that he has to find for the municipal laborers fund? The municipal pension fund, rather. The comprehensive financial report that now doubles as the preliminary budget is going to be coming out later this week, and it's supposed to include probably the smallest shortfall in quite a while, somewhere in the vicinity of $100 to $150 million. But again, you don't know what assumptions the mayor has made on that. And then we have a lot of question marks. For example, the Justice Department is busy investigating the Chicago Police Department. They will surely come up with recommendations that are going to be very costly. They might ask for more supervision of the police. I think that's almost a given. They might demand that there be more police officers, that there are too many of them working too many hours, and that is a recipe for problems. What will be the cost, and how will they pay for those? They can't say no because it'll be part of a court order, and there'll be a monitor probably riding herd over the city to make sure that they follow what the Justice Department recommends. There also will be probably more pushback from the city council, and we've seen that. They may demand more police officers just because of crime and the shootings and homicides being up 50%. The mayor has a situation where the aldermen are not, just going along with everything he says. They see that he's weaker since the Laquan McDonald thing, and so they are. There's a lot of wild cards there. There's also the retiree health care decision that came down last week that was sort of a mixed bag for the city, but the city is on the hook to continue to provide health care for retirees who retired before 1989. That's 20-some-odd thousand people. So that's another cost. Under Mayor Daley, property taxes were frozen for 19 or 20 of his 22 years in office. That is absurd. Property taxes should be going up every year at the minimum with the cost of inflation. If that had happened, the pension problem would be so much less. Under Emanuel, the property tax levy for the city will more than double, and yet it still won't be enough. that's a scary thing because you can't, there's only so much you can raise property taxes. And that's why the city council used transaction tax windfall from the Skyway sale to provide a ridiculously low property tax rebate that's not going to help anybody save their house, but it's political inoculation for them. Mayor Daley left the city in such a mess, and he borrowed so much and he sold off assets that it's going to take a long time to unravel. I mean, the mayor had to add another $1 billion to the city's mountain of debt just to try to continue to unravel some of these swap transactions and pay all these penalties. So I think the bottom line is that Mayor Emanuel, and as I've said this before, Mayor Emanuel, this is almost certain in my mind to be his last term. He will hope to someday go down in history as the mayor who helped pull Chicago back from the brink, but it's going to take a while.
Thanks, Fran. Our next and final panelist is John Cass. All of us know him from his work at the Chicago Tribune. We're well aware that he grew up in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago, the son of Greek immigrants. He has held numerous positions. I first got to know John when he was covering City Hall and I was sort of saddened when I heard that he was no longer going to be the day-to-day political reporter because of his dogged determination in covering, at that time, Mayor Daley and what was going on in City Hall. But I think all of us were so pleased when he took on the role as a columnist and learned so much. Who else would have taught us how to make beer can chicken or the proper way to take your son's deer hunting, or even better, how Greek Easter is supposed to be celebrated and the proper way to slice head cheese and bag groceries. All of these things have come out of his work as a columnist for the Tribune, for which he's been recognized, around the country for his work, not the least of which his political coverage and his understanding of how City Hall works. John Cass.
Thank you, Larry. And thanks to the City Club for having me and to be again on a panel with Franny and good friends. And I was hoping that during Larry's discussion originally that Kirk would hold a news conference after to talk about this, transit TIF. But I guess I'll let you talk to him later about that. The mayor, I'm sorry, is not here. I was hoping that the mayor of Chicago could be here, but I think he was busy giving CPR to Debbie Wasserman Schultz right now. But he is famous for saying that you never let a crisis go to waste. And he's a very, very smart political operative. And so given the fact that Naomi tells us that the city officials and state officials don't have their heads in the sand all the way, I'd like to offer a way to get some money for the city, okay? A citywide bike toll and bike tax system, all right? To increase the revenue that's needed so that the little bike people, once they get back from Philadelphia, upset about, what happened to Bernie, they could have something else to be upset about. Now, a few years ago, I was asked to be on a panel here, and I said something that got a few of the people upset, and those of you who are working with the mayor, please make sure that you write the note down accurately as I say it, okay? Take your acid reflux pills, because I think that the city is in much worse shape. I think it's, like I said before, on the way to bankruptcy. I'm not a financial expert, and I defer to Franny for all her knowledge on the, what's going on in current form right now as we speak. I'm more interested in the political issues. And I don't see, given the way the state is run, I see what Rauner's trying to do, and I see how he's thwarted. And seeing what the city is trying to do, and how they don't have the political will. I just don't see the political will necessary to do things like increase the property taxes to the levels they have to be increased. I wish it were true, it weren't true, but I kind of get the feeling Chicago is like Detroit. Now, everybody in Detroit, this, all you folks, you're the people who know how to read balanced budgets. You know how to read ledgers and so forth. You know what's going on. And all of you, I would assume, talk to each other and say, we're screwed, and we don't have the political will to make the decisions, and you're not seeing it being done. And so the city slides. And the people who are not in this room are starting to pick up on that. And once they pick up on that seriously, I wonder how you're going to govern a city where you have the middle class on the run. Because already they're nervous. You know this. You know that they're nervous. You know that they're nervous about crime. You know that they're nervous about the fact that the schools aren't working. How many people here send their children to high schools in the city of Chicago that are public schools? Oh, okay, three people, four. Good. That's nice. Now, if I lived in the city and my kids didn't get into the magnet schools, I'd be out. But I left earlier because I didn't want to have to be tempted to call somebody, which I wouldn't do, but people do. So too much spending, not enough cutting, huge amounts of debt being placed on the shoulders of the young people, the same young people who are moving in and getting the bike lanes. They're the ones that are going to be... That's where the debt is going to be placed on their necks. So if I look 10 years down the road, you can look 10 years down the road. Naomi can, and she's being optimistic because she's in this room. And Lawrence, in his usual dry, acerbic self, laid it out pretty good too. So did Franny. Now, I don't want this to be a personal thing with the mayor because I really don't think, I agree with Franny, I don't think the guy knew what he was getting into when he first was installed in the job, let's be honest. There was a Charlie Rose shuffle. Oh, I'd like to be mayor someday, he said on Charlie Rose. Next thing you know, Billy Daly's in Washington. He's here. Mike Madigan's attorney, Casper, right, made sure, did the blessing. Yes, you're a resident. You lived in Washington. You're a resident now. And it was all done. But I think the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, is a very smart man. And I don't think he really grasped the situation. And I think he grasps it now. I think that Rahm Emanuel has more brains in that chopped off finger than Rich Daley has in his whole body. Okay? And he looked at this thing and thought, I could take care of this. And he can't. It's not just his fault. And I want to be clear on that. Now, when he first became elected, he said, let's have breakfast once a week, once a month, John. You and me, breakfast once a month. I can say that now, Franny. Once a month, and you'll get to know what I know, and we'll get to know each other, and we'll get to be on the same page. So he asked me the first breakfast, what do you think? And I said, you better put all this stuff on Rich Daley immediately. Because if he doesn't own it and it's his, you're going to own it. He said, I can't do that. And I knew why immediately. Because you don't bite the hand that feeds you and you don't bite the arm that installs you. But politically, it was a smart thing to do. And he didn't do it. And now he owns it. And that monthly breakfast we were supposed to have, that was the last one we had. But here's the deal, okay? What I think is the problem. The other panelists have laid it out. They know the numbers. I don't think that there is a political will in a system, a one-party state, that can handle the decisions that have to be made. A lot of this I blamed before on the Republicans. They're the ones who subsidize the real estate owners. They subsidize Mike Madigan's growing real estate reduction business. And I also blame it on Democrats like Rod Blagojevich, who kept wanting to bring in more voters and put more people on on this role or that role, and the pension and everything went up in the air, and there was no money to pay for it. So the schools don't perform. The cops, we need more cops. We don't have them. Nobody here among the elites are sending their kids to the public schools. Something has to be done, and quickly. And I don't think it's being done quick enough. The mayor of Chicago could have probably taken Chicago schools into bankruptcy a lot earlier. I think he could have made more cuts in his first 4 years. He wants to be reelected, and now, as Franny said, and as I've written, and as everybody in politics knows, the man's wounded. And there's nothing in Chicago, at City Hall, like a wounded mayor. Right, Bill? To get aldermen, you know, the salivary glands of the aldermen going, and they want this and they want that, and there's no money for it. So that's where we are right now. Chicago as Detroit before Detroit really became Detroit. If things don't change, if there aren't really good, hard decisions made, I don't see a way out of it. All civilizations fall and great cities fall. And they fall not because the elites don't know what the problems are. All of you in this room know what the problems are. You're the elite of Chicago. This is the City Club of Chicago. But you also must acknowledge that politically, there's not the will to do what has to be done. And so I don't know what the long-term investment opportunities are here, but they don't look good to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if you have questions, don't forget to fill out your cards, hold them up in the air. They'll be collecting them. So it's been said by a couple of you that the mayor did not create this problem. He inherited it. What about the city council? And what should the city council be doing, since so much of the city council was here while a lot of these problems were developing? Do you see a role for the city council?
Yeah, I see. I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
may
Jeff.
I?
We can start with you, John.
Could you hear me? Is this thing on? There are a few people in the city council, as Fran will tell you in greater detail, that stood up and fought daily when he was doing that ridiculous Abu Dhabi one-time parking meter deal, right? There are people that stood up. What the city council doesn't have is a staff to do what to study what they need to study, and there's no opposing view, a staff, to help them. Ed Burke has a staff. Ed Burke's probably one of the smartest political guys in town. If not, Burke and Madigan, I think, are the two smartest political guys I've ever seen. But he has a staff. Does the progressive wing, does the city council have a staff to break down the numbers that they need?
They have their own financial analyst, right. A guy named Ben Winnick. This was the job that Helen Schiller wanted, you remember, and they fought over that. So they do have that. And there is no reason in the world why financial ideas cannot and should not originate with the aldermen. The mayor has even invited them to submit their ideas because he wants to share the blame with them. So obviously that could happen. I mean, when you think back to the Olympics, the city council, if you forget this, agreed to an unlimited guarantee. Thank God we didn't get that, because they had a sign on the dotted line and put some skin in the game, as they demanded at the time. So to me, the aldermen are just as culpable as Daley, because Burke was there. He was there when they leased the parking meters, when they sold the Skyway. I remember them saying, and the Skyway is at least looked at as the best of the selling off of assets deals, even though they sold it to the Canadian pension funds for $1 billion more than we got. But Burke said it was the best deal since we bought Manhattan. I mean, it was they hailed it. And so the council for many, many years has not done the job of oversight. It begs the question, why do we have 50 aldermen if they're not doing their job? They basically go along with the mayor, and now finally some of the aldermen are getting a spine because they were culpable in not demanding to see the Laquan McDonald video also.
But not guys like, look, I'm the last guy who's going to stand up and say I'm a liberal Democrat in this room, okay? But Scott Wagsbeck, guys like that, they stood up, right, Franny?
Right. But again, they were voices in the wilderness. The powerful aldermen, the ones who've been there forever, the Pat O'Connors and the Ed Burks, they went along with everything. And so now the onus is on them because they, you know, because the mayor is trying to share the blame and because he's much less powerful than he was, to come up with ideas too. And somebody has got to put in an automatic escalator with property taxes. When we're done with these massive increases, which we're going to have for schools and pensions and so on, there has got to be an automatic escalator, just like Rahm Emanuel put in on water and sewer rates and just like he put in on the city sticker. Every single year, the property tax must go up, and that's why, even with all these massive increases, property taxes will still be a bargain compared to the suburbs.
Thank you. The city council last week approved $4.7 million in settlements, lawsuits against the police department. Mm-hmm. In the last 10 years, this city council has approved $500 million in borrowing to pay for settlements against the city of Chicago. If you were the mayor or as a member of the city council, is that contributing to the growth of the debt of the city, that we're not dealing with our settlements, and should we have been dealing with them as part of the regular budget process? And we'll start with you, Naomi.
Sure. So I would keep coming back to the idea that when we're talking about the pensions, we're talking about tens of billions of dollars. So is 500, you know, is that a large sum that you mentioned? Yes. You know, is it adding to the debt incrementally? Yes, definitely. But I would say it's not the core of the problem, the way we would see it.
What about the dynamic for the other two of not having to deal with our problem because borrowing money appears to be easier than raising property taxes?
You're talking about for police settlements?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of funding police settlements with borrowed money is absurd. You've got to fund it as you go, and then you'll have the heat to hold it down. Obviously, the police investigation by the Justice Department is going to come up with certain reforms and early warning systems and so on that are going to try to address this whole issue of why we get into the situation where we have police abuse. And so that'll hold it down. But when you're borrowing money, it's like monopoly money. If you're not paying for it on an as-you-go basis, there's less pressure to hold it down.
And there's really not a lot of money after the last deal that was referenced, the billion-dollar bar. What's left to run the city with? As far as the police go, anytime there's a lot of money being made, I always like to look at who's going to make the money. Right, there are a couple law firms in town. Anybody hear from those law firms? Seem to be making a lot of money on this stuff. I'd like to see more examination of that, and I'd also like to see more examination of who the bankers and the deals that are made. I'd like to see more personality in there, see who are these people, what decisions are they making. But I leave that to others.
The Chicago Public Schools, it's been pointed out, that has its own severe financial crisis. They have the very low credit rating, also non-investment grade. Do you see any opportunities for how the city can avoid a teacher strike when they have nothing to offer to settle the strike financially at CPS?
So I really can't comment on the strike, but I'll talk a little bit about the finances of CPS. So CPS is rated 4 notches lower than the city. While the city has a long-term problem, a serious one, a severe one, the schools have an immediate liquidity problem. How are we going to pay our bills this year? Okay. And Fran talked about it in a lot of depth. There are pieces that are definite. There are a lot of pieces that are maybe. And then there's another piece that's to be determined. The schools are going to come out with a budget in August. I think the key will be what assumptions they make. The schools are already borrowing from banks for short-term liquidity. You know, I think sort of the renewal of that bank loan will be coming up next month. Will the size of it stay the same or increase? They issued long-term debt last February at a high interest rate, but a piece of that debt went to pay current expenses. So sort of like what you were talking about with the police settlements, but for basic meat and potatoes expenditures. So I think the next few months will be really, really critical. I think the only thing I would add to is that although the state does affect the city, it affects the schools a lot more because the schools have less control over their own destiny. A lot more is really going to be out of their hands and in the state's hands.
And when you look at the fact that they paid 8.75% to borrow in February, and there's a cap of 9% statewide, then you wonder when will they be denied access to borrowing and that things get so bad. So that what would happen then? I do also look at the high schools, and you look at how few students some of these high schools have. As much heat as the mayor took for closing 50 elementary schools, he needs to attack the high schools. He exempted the high schools because it was politically difficult, as John said, not the political will to take that on because he was taking so much heat for closing 50 schools. But really, when you get down to it, the schools cannot afford to keep these one-third filled high schools open.
The problem is it's also a political system. It's not about education. If it were about education, people in this room would be sending their kids to the schools. So it's really not about education. It's, to me personally, it's a civil rights crime. It's African-American and minority kids sentenced to substandard education by a democratic political system that wants to maintain its power. And you know how it's done because there are people in the room who know how it's done. You've got the bureaucrats in CPS. The bureaucrats in CPS are functionaries of the certain caucuses in the state legislature. You got all these games being played. No one is helping. We're not talking about the children's education. And I would not experiment with my child's education for 4 years. I don't know why people expect that that others will do that. So I think that the only way to solve it, maybe if there's a crisis, you know, when we get to that crisis point and crises are the way to change things, I don't know, maybe you have to think again about school choice. I think you have to let the parents of the children who, there are kids who take the bus like four or five buses to get to school, to get to the right school, and they have the kind of parent that's driving them to do that. What kind of long-term, you're talking about long-term, I'm sorry, but you're talking about long-term health of a city, and we're perpetuating corrupt systems that don't work. If any of the CEOs in this room could just be mayor for like 2 weeks and do what they have to do, you know what they do? They'd take they'd come to my house where I cook the lamb that you love, Larry, and they'd get the cleaver, and they'd come out, and they'd say, can I borrow it? Yeah, okay. And they'd start chopping. The whole system is not just about the budgets and who's got what, you know, what's the percentage of the debt. It's about the people that aren't being served by systems that are corrupt, and we all know it, and we're just keeping our mouths shut because, I'm not going to write an email about literacy and teachers. But you know what? Give the guy credit for actually standing up and putting his own money down, trying to save things. Sorry. I'll shut up now.
No, that actually follows. We had a question about school choice and whether that should be one of the parts of Chicago Public Schools in terms of them going forward, allowing greater choice in order to maintain more students in the system. Did either of you want to talk about school choice or any what
well,
its impact or charter?
You know,
schools?
As I said earlier, we don't give advice, so yeah. I'm going to pass on that one.
Okay.
You talking about vouchers?
Vouchers, no. Yeah. Why not a voucher system? Why not greater choice in Chicago?
Well, obviously there should be vouchers, but if you do that, then a lot of people are going to just head for the doors. And then what are you left with, you know?
Right. I think one of the great challenges that we see with the charter school movement and its success in Chicago is what was the plan to deal with what was left after charter
Correct.
Schools?
Correct.
What are we doing in order to not just maintain the physical buildings, which is a challenge enough with those 50 schools, what was the plan for doing it? I think we see a lot of areas in Chicago where there was no plan, right? Because the idea that someone's
right.
going to work something out later, that it's all going to come together, and you're not willing to commit to what the plan is now, is often a recipe for bad long-term decision-making. One of the and we have lots of questions, and I apologize in advance because we're not going to be able to get through to all of them. But it's been raised about bankruptcy, and it's been raised that it should be considered. What is going to have to change in terms of the political leadership of our city council, our state legislature? In all of you have pointed out that the city is in crisis, that we have financial and state city financial, Chicago Public Schools, and yet we're seeing a state government that still doesn't have a budget. What do you see as the answer that's going to, or what is going to be the development that forces the tough decisions that we know the government needs to make?
Can I just say a word on that? So there's a lot of focus on bankruptcy, but governments can go into default, you know, go over the brink with bankruptcy or without bankruptcy. The difference is that bankruptcy is orderly. It's not, well, I should say it's more orderly. Mm-hmm. So it's a framework for negotiating with your creditors under the supervision of a federal judge and bringing all the parties to the table, like what Detroit went through. You also have situations where people just throw up their hands and say, we can't pay you. Without that order, and then you're disorderly. Then you have everyone suing everyone, and a big mess. But that can happen too. So I think when you run out of money, it's sort of, do you have that framework, which right now doesn't exist in Illinois, or not?
Thank you.
I don't see bankruptcy as something that Emmanuel would ever tolerate. I think he would move heaven and earth before he allowed either the city or the schools to go into bankruptcy. Because once you do that, you have such a black mark on your name, the city's reputation, its place as a place to do business. We have had corporate relocations here. Nobody would want to come to a city that have bankrupt schools or a bankrupt city government. I don't see it. I think they would approve a gigantic tax increase, another one, before they would allow that to happen.
And there's a book I have to read, Chicago's Not Bankrupt, and I hear it's pretty good. And I plan on reading it to find out why Chicago isn't bankrupt. But politically, the state for 40 years has been bankrupt, run by some of the smartest people I know. Long-term strategic thinkers, very smart men who really care about their city and their state, for all the demonization I do about them. And locally, the mayor's too smart, right? He's a smart fellow. But if it's not done, again, I just repeat, crime is not going away. Education is not improving. So how do you get people to stay in the city? But once they're 40, they're not going to be on the little bikes anymore as much as they used to be.
The biggest problem the city has, I think, also is, like John says, the crime and the idea that the police are not being proactive. They are laying back. When the mayor fired Gary McCarthy after saying, I have your back, I have your back, then the police officers on the street said, if he didn't have his back, you sure as hell ain't going to have mine.
Yeah, but Franny, that also goes back when we were working together. To remember Jeremiah Mirde, right? I mean, goes back to that other one. So there are plenty of stories about coppers laying down, and it's hard for sergeants to get some guys to work. And one of you mentioned more supervision in the police. Did you, Fran?
Yeah.
Yeah, they need more sergeants, too. You need more
lieutenants. They need more police officers.
Yeah.
But I think the crime is a bigger threat than taxes, even. If people don't feel safe, they're not going to stay here.
Yeah, I think one of the things that certainly when you look at the broadest impact, the threat of unlimited tax increases at a time when there isn't this feeling of stability
right.
is probably the greatest threat to the city of Chicago. And it requires action immediately, right? We know that the city doesn't have enough money to pay for more policemen right now. We know, as you pointed out effectively, that the Justice Department is going to come in with a series of recommendations, which will not be cheap, which they never are, that are needed. So now we're stuck in a situation where we're trying to keep people in the city of Chicago at a time where the economic bargain is changing when you're seeing dramatic tax increases.
But, Larry, you would not have accountants, either anybody would not have accountants working 36-hour shifts, right, on serious information, because you want them to be sharp, okay? So what if you had a gun and you worked that way? Or you work, like Franny's stories and the Tribune, and sometimes both have exhaustively examined, the overtime for police.
$116 million a year last
year. But these cops are tired. They're exhausted. They're making decisions not about your bottom line, but about somebody's life or death with a gun. And then we worry about we're going to pay another $500 million to... Levy or whoever the law firm is that's making all the cash.
I think.
Sorry, should I not have mentioned? I didn't mean.
I think it's free to mention whatever you would like. Naomi, since you came from out of town, and how much time does the city have, and how much different are we than New York when it was in real financial trouble?
There's some time. You could probably measure it in years, but not in decades. Mm-hmm. There's a few things I'll just mention to sum up. I think the proposal for the municipal pension plan that's going to be forthcoming will be really important just to understand, as opposed to the abstract things we're talking about, what's going to concretely be on the table. Another thing we haven't really talked about is how are these pension plans doing in the investment markets? Mm-hmm. Last year, they kind of broke even on average, but the city assumes 7.5-8% a year earnings. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's completely out of anyone's control,
and wrong, probably.
And then lastly, there is a connection between the schools and the city, because every dollar that the schools raises property taxes is a dollar that the city can't raise. Cook County raised sales taxes, so somehow that kind of gets on a different ledger. But you're basically taxing the people who live and work here, and there's a limit. So I think this whole issue of overlapping governments is a big one. I would just end, these challenges are very real, very serious. As I said earlier, we do have a negative outlook on the city's rating as well as the schools, which means more likely to go down than to go up.
And maybe just take a minute, Fran and John, for your closing comments on this one.
I do think that the city needs a new source of revenue, and I don't know quite what that will be, whether it's a city income tax, whether it's a commuter tax. I know that the mayor doesn't want any of those, but we need something else. Something new, whether it's a sales tax on services, but some new source so that you don't have to keep going back to the same pool of people. The sales tax will be difficult. We're already at, 10.25% now after the county? So that's a great source of revenue. It would be big money, but if the city raised that, we'd be an outlier again. So somebody better come up with some new idea because we need it.
I'd just like to close by saying thank you for letting me speak to you and to look at this date, because it's what all of us have said and what Larry has said in his very subtle but acerbic and pointed way, and what all the other people up here have said. You know that the city's in trouble. So look at the date. Remember it. Remember the date. And 10 years down the road, you can remember this day, I hope. Thank you.
Thank you to all the panelists. Thank you to the City Club. Thanks to all of you for being here.